Morning, Casey.
Morning, Casey. This is the system office.
Is that Christy?
That is.
Hey, Christy, one quick thing. I tried to open the minutes and my computer keeps telling me that the link has been removed. Whatever that means.
Okay, let me look into that right away.
Yeah, I'm having, Christy, this is Brian, I'm having the same, it's not telling me that, it's just blank when I click on the links.
Hey there, Brian.
I was having the same trouble, too. I didn't know if it was something others were experiencing.
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Ryan.
Well, check. Just send out an email with a link so you get it.
Good morning, Tim Mahalik has joined.
Morning, Tim.
Good morning.
Dan Trainer is on the line.
Man.
Caleb Dishock on the line.
Yeah.
Good morning, this is Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Morning.
Hi, Casey.
Morning.
I apologize. I must have had the old number. My collaboration code was some other conference call, and I was the only person there, and so I figured there might be a problem. So I apologize for being late. I was sitting on a different conference call line, and so, Christy, can we call the roll?
Board Chair Hacker.
Here.
Dr. Ryan.
Here.
Nassett.
Here.
Mr. Trainer.
Here.
Mr. Deschaff.
Here.
Mr. Mahalik.
Here.
Ms. Loader. Ms. Mattern.
Here.
Dr. Dragsa.
Here.
ESC.
Scogan here.
ESU.
Laura Nelson is here.
Lake Region.
Bob Darling here.
Mayville.
Brian is here.
Minot.
Morning, Christy. This is Steve Shirley.
DCB.
Good morning, Jerry Migler here.
NDSCS.
Good morning. This is John Richmond and Dennis Clayton.
UND.
Morning, Josh Wynn here.
NDSU.
Morning, Christy. Dean Bershani.
Valley City.
Good morning, Al LaFave here.
Williston.
Good morning, John Miller here.
And Riley Yaden.
Thank you. Darren King, are you on the phone?
Morning, Christy. Yes, I am.
Okay. Kenneth Helping from CCF. Are you on the call? Okay. In the system office, we have the Chancellor, Phil, Lisa, Tammy, myself, Billy Joe, Terry, Laura, Carol, Eric from the Attorney General's office. Dave Thompson has also joined. Have I missed anyone?
Chris Paskin, Attorney General's office.
Hi, Chris. Okay, thank you.
Renee Blums from OMB.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christy, and good morning to everybody. The first item on our agenda is the agenda. Are there any changes or additions?
Board Chair Hacker, this is Dan Trainer. I think we should add before the presidential contract a potential revision to policy 305.1 regarding the term of presidential contracts from 3 years to 5 years, as the governance committee discussed.
And here we go.
So I think it'd be like 14A.
Like a 15 or a 14 additional topic.
Do you need that printed off?
Probably 15-1 and 15-2, or 15A and 15B, being the presidential contract being B.
Why don't we just take that on the tail end of 15 and we can include that conversation?
Yeah.
So we don't necessarily need to modify the agenda, but we'll allow you to discuss that in item number 15 as we take up the contract.
Right. Fair enough.
Okay, great. Sounds great. Okay. Any other changes or feedback?
With that understanding, I move to approve. Dan Trainer moves to approve.
Second, Casey.
Thank you. Is there a motion and a second? Christy, if you call the roll.
Okay. Mr. Deschak?
Yes.
Ms. Nassett?
Yes.
Mr. Mahalik?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. So in our annual review of how, and this is coming from board members, there has been some concern over the consent agenda. And it's a blind type of feedback that we get. And so the consent agenda is meant to take non-controversial items that have been approved by a committee unanimously in general, and to move that business forward as efficiently as possible, but to be responsive to the concerns that have been expressed in those feedback that we get from the board members, that there was concern about the use of the consent agenda. We're going to slow down this portion of the meeting to try to resolve and be responsive to those concerns. So items 2 through 10, which are on the consent agenda, please take a moment to look at those items and feel free to ask questions of Member Mihalik or Dushak or Member Trainer, who have items on the consent agenda from their committees. So I'm going to just take a moment. Are there any questions about items 2 through 10? And just as a reminder, it's a if you'd like an item to be pulled off of the consent, there's no need for a second of the motion, and we will discuss that topic individually. So looking at items 2 through 11, are there any questions on 2 through 11, or is there a motion to remove any of them from the consent agenda? Otherwise, we will take a motion for the consent items.
Chair Hacker, this is Casey. The September 26th meeting minutes haven't come through yet, or I know that Christy was trying to set it up. I haven't been able to see them. I'm totally comfortable if it gets rolled into the next meeting, but I think we need to at least read the minutes before we approve them. So I'm asking that be moved out of there, unless that link is in there now. Is the link in there, Christy?
Dr. Ryan, I can put the link in there, otherwise it would take down the whole agenda for me to reattach it, but I did send it in an email right when you brought it to my attention this morning. Have you received it? I sent it to the presidents and to the board members.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm bouncing in and out of different things. I guess on this one, I don't have any problem if we review the minutes at the next meeting.
Sounds like a request. Casey, would you like to move the September 26th minutes to the next meeting?
Correct. I would make a motion that we approve the consent agenda with movement of the September 26th meeting minutes onto the consent agenda for the next board meeting. Or I'll say a future board meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Dan Trainer, seconds.
Okay. Thank you. There's been a motion and a second. Christy, if you'd call the roll.
Mr. Mihalik?
Yes.
Ms. Neffet?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Dushak?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. And that will bring us to item number 12, Train ND. Ms. Johnson.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. And every other year, the state Train ND directors put together an annual report, and that's usually aligned with the legislative session. But recent audit findings contained a recommendation that the Train ND directors put together an annual business plan and to present that to the board on an annual basis. And so that's what's been presented to the board today. That went through the Academic and Student Affairs Committee previously and had support of them, but they are by state statute required to present their annual business plan to the State Board of Higher Ed for approval. Again, this annual report is prepared by the Train ND directors with support from their regional advisory boards, and those pass through the president en route to the board for your approval today. Oh, and as a reminder, the directors are on the line if there are questions regarding any specific subsections, but it's really a compilation of the four regions with a kind of a summary page at the top summarizing their activities.
Casey, I would move approval.
Mihalik, second.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Christy, there's been a motion and a second. Can you call the roll?
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Ms. Neffet?
Yes.
Mr. Mihalik?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Dushak?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. That brings us to item number 13. The Chancellor, if you'd give us an update on the request here for the Wilson State College and WSC Foundation Agreement.
Yes, Chair Herrick, thank you. So some quick background for the newer board members. back in a year ago, 2018, when the board approved the Envision 2030 strategy, we were mindful of the unique challenges in oil country, which the data keeps bearing out, outrageous housing prices, very unstable labor markets, and committed to try to do something in the next legislative session, which it did successfully. Williston was supported with $750,000 of kind of an innovation grant to try to adapt programs to, you know, unique needs of workforce and whatnot. We were able to get at least a modest pay raise for all the system. But one of the things that the foundation at Williston realized had kind of shifted was past president preceded Dr. Miller had a campus home. And kind of during the oil downturn and whatnot, the home was sold. And the current president is basically living on an economy that's very challenging. So as people know, the Williston Foundation has been incredibly generous to students, free college. The legislature has now provided $750,000 for new programming and whatnot. But I think the foundation felt from a senior executive level need to do something to mitigate the situation with housing there for Dr. Miller. So very generously, they've provided for a $500 a month stipend, so to speak, and that requires the board to revise the contract to allow them to accept that. And I'm hoping down the line in the next legislative session we'll be able to address just the great difficulty in the oil country, as you all have been briefed before. I think five directors had taken jobs in the last year in the economy. So it's a step in that direction, and is consistent with what Member Mihalik had talked about some months ago about making a priority people and the ability to recruit and retain good people. So request your support to revise the contract of item 14. So I'm kind of speaking to 13 and 14 together, Chair Hacker, if that's okay.
Okay, great. Thanks. Sounds like the explanation would be the same for item number 14. So I'm hopeful that a motion could cover 13 and 14.
Chair Hacker, it's Member Mihalik. I make a motion to approve items number 13 and 14.
I'll second that. Casey?
Great. Thank you very much. Christy, if you call the roll.
Ms. Nesbitt?
Yes.
Mr. Traynor?
Yes.
Mr. Martin? Sorry about that. Mr. Mihalik?
Yes.
Mr. Dishak?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. That brings us to item number 15, the presidential draft contract. Mr. Traynor.
Thank you, Chair Hacker. You have before you a draft contract that has been developed by legal counsel and also vetted through the governance committee. I'm going to ask Eric Olson to review some of the highlights of the contract, and then one of the items that the governance committee debated that I'd like us to consider, the governance committee decided on a three-year term or to keep it at a three-year term, but in the initial draft that was considered by the governance committee, we considered a five-year term for purposes of the contract. That requires a policy change to policy 305.1, and Eric can explain a little bit of that. But I think that there are some reasons for and obviously against a longer-term contract for presidents. The purpose of this contract is to have one ready so that when we hire a president for the University of North Dakota, we have a starting point for negotiation. One of the things that I will advise the board, it's my understanding that Casey Ryan's committee, the search committee for the UND president, has shared the draft contract, or AGB, their consulting firm, will be sharing the draft contract with the individuals who may be considering serving as president of the University of North Dakota so that they can seek guidance from legal counsel. And we may request that that guidance from their own legal counsel come before we have the final determination of selection for the position. And we can talk about that a bit as we go through the agenda. But Eric, if you would go through the contract for the board, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Member Trainer, Chair Hacker, members of the State Board of Higher Education. This, as requested by Committee Chair Trainer in the past, I went through and drafted this proposed forum contract for future new presidential hires. There are a number of provisions here, including that some of which are largely just legal boilerplate terms, which are present in almost all contracts, and then a lot of other pieces of the contract make explicit the incorporation of board policy. So I'll go through and just sort of note which of those are. Please feel free to stop me at any point if you have questions regarding any of the matters that I'm covering here. So the first section just largely lays out the nature of the position, things of that nature. Paragraph 2 talks about the term. This is where any revision would take place, whether that's 3 or 5 years, and then lays out the start and end dates of that contract. The paragraph 3 is lists the duties of the duties and responsibilities of a president in the North Dakota University system. It is taken not verbatim, but substantively from SBHE policy 305.1, as passed by the board previously. And then, with the exception of one paragraph, which was recommended for removal by the governance committee, you can see that note on the document just above paragraph 3H. The paragraph 4 basically just discusses the base salary of the president, and that's subject to the ranges set by the State Board of Higher Education, and is subject to negotiation within that range. Paragraph 5 lays out the requirement of an annual performance review, which is also set by policy 305.1. Paragraph 6 is where a lot of the flexibility may be located in terms of moving and housing expenses, vehicle use. Paragraph C is something that most universities across the country have, which is things like the foundation the school providing tickets to home games for the president's use with respect to donors, important persons, et cetera. Or a suite, depending on the availability at the institution. The paragraph D just lays out the standard travel expense policy, and paragraph E lays out the retirement and other benefit programs. I'd like to thank NDSU's staff and President Prashani's chief of staff for assistance with revising this paragraph to meet the reality of the way that president's benefits are handled within the system. Paragraph 7 is a new paragraph. This is one of the primary reasons that this contract was actually drafted, and that's the instance of a resignation of a president prior to the end of their term. And that is provides for the payment that if a president were to leave a North Dakota University System institution during their term to go to another higher education system or institution, then there would be a requirement that president or his or her future institution pay a set amount to the North Dakota University system and that amount is prorated by the number of years that they have been, how many years are left in the contract or how many years into the contract they would be. And then there is an exception to that, which is that if a president leaves an institution to leave the world of higher education. And that's paragraph E. Paragraph 8 is sort of a general sort of conflict of interest, talks about disclosure, complying with laws, and outside compensation with respect to the president. This is a paragraph that is not set forth in board policy, though it is common across the country and would be subject to negotiation potentially. The paragraph 9 talks about suspension. This is a suspension for cause situation where the this is set forth in SBHE policy 305.1, but it lays out some potential grounds for doing so at subsections A through K, and it explicitly provides that presidents have all due process protections available, and that the chancellor would consult with the board chair prior to taking any such action. Paragraph 10 is titled Termination for Cause. This is also taken from State Board Policy 305.1, including the process that's laid out within that paragraph. And then paragraph 11 is another piece that goes along with the recruitment fee piece from paragraph 7, which is basically if the state board were to materially diminish the president's authority or ability or duties, then that president would be entitled to give notice to the board and basically say, you have diminished my role, and I'm basically protesting that. And if the board did not take that, did not sort of resolve that issue, then the president would be able to resign his or her position without paying the recruitment fee. And paragraph 12 regards compensation on termination, which is basically what's already set forth in paragraph 305.1, which is a termination without cause requires the payment of 1 year's worth of salary. And then paragraph 3 talks about termination on death or disability. And then the rest of the the rest of the contract is largely legal boilerplate, with the exception of the end of paragraph 15, which notes that if there becomes a conflict between the terms of this agreement and SBHE policy procedure, such as if a policy procedure is revised in response to a change of law or something like that, policy procedure prevails. With that, subject to, of course, paragraph 11, which talks about the diminution of authority. With that said, that largely completes my discussion of the contract. So it hits the one other issue that Member Traynor asked me to cover with respect to policy 305.1 requires initial presidential contracts are 3 years in length. So to change that policy, to change that initial contract would require a change to policy. And that's, I believe that covers it. Member Traynor, please let me know if I've missed anything or if anyone has any questions.
I don't believe so, Eric. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions for Eric? Hearing none. One of the things that I think the board should consider, the governance committee considered it, is we are limited by policy 305.1 to a three-year initial contract. And one of the concerns that I have regarding that type of scenario for the hiring of a president in their first instance is it puts them in a position with the academic hiring calendar to start looking for jobs basically in the second year of their three-year term, because if they want, you know, if things are going well or aren't going well, or they don't know how things are going to go, they may start looking for another position within the time frame contemplated in our contract. The other thing, I think that we have a general or should have a general expectation that whomever we hire at UND or Dickinson or Bismarck stay at least 5 years. And then the third reason why a longer term contract is useful is that it provides the new president sufficient space to make perhaps some hard choices that might need to be made without having to have the concern of a renewal contract or a renewal consideration coming up so quickly. It gives them, I think, a sufficient time so that they can make perhaps some hard or unpopular choices on campus that might need to be made, and to see the benefits of those before the contract, the initial contract renewal comes up. But that would take a change in our policy 305.1 to do that. If people are concerned or board members are concerned about the payout, because typically when you have a five-year contract, you have a five-year payout, we are limited to a one-year payout by policy and state law anyway. So whether our contract is 3 years or 5 years, it's not going to affect the payout if we or the chancellor terminate a president, or if a president leaves before the end of their term for some reason under this policy. So as an initial matter, I'd like to move to modify policy 305.1 to allow the board to have a five-year initial term contract for a president instead of a three-year initial term contract.
So, Member Trainer, is that a motion? Just a
yes.
Second here. I just want to, let's just, this is a major topic. I want to ensure we have some clarity.
State of Washington's time is now at 9:30. South Dakota is due as
the can somebody mute their AM radio? Thank you. So, Member Trainer, is this an, as a board, we are going to have a meeting in November in which we can consider additional topics in addition to the appointment of an interim president of DSU. And so there will be a November meeting, then there will be a December meeting at UND. And so there's two meetings between now and when hopefully the work of the search committee is completed and we're able to hire a permanent president for the University of North Dakota. So I just want to make sure everybody's aware of that, number one. And then I'm going to go to, although it wasn't on the agenda, but I do have notes here when we previewed the agenda that the intent here would be to look at this presidential contract for a first read only. So is your motion under a first reading for the five-year or for the presidential contract and the five-year?
For the five year only, the policy change on a first reading, and then we'll take the contract up separately. And if board members want to postpone the lengthened term to consider it, that's certainly fair. My concern is that if we are going to make a change, that we make it in sufficient time so that whomever is negotiating the contract on behalf of the potential president has enough notice to be aware of this issue. My suspicion is that they will favor a longer term contract, at least initially, you know, for their hire. There are benefits to them not having. One of the things that I've noticed, Chair Hacker, is that when we have the renewal for presidential contracts, we tend to get a lot of comments about the performance of presidents. That puts it off for a newly hired president for a number of years. We may still get comments, and they're always welcome from the public, but the comments related to renewal will be put off until a president has had sufficient time to make an impact on campus with a longer-term contract.
My motion is for the clarification of the policy. And this will be for a first read, and we will take the second reading, unless a different motion is made here, in our mid, probably third week of November meeting.
This is Casey.
Questions?
Chair Hacker, and I would second that motion for the first read, and then I have a comment.
Okay. Thank you. Go right ahead.
I think in doing this, we have to respect our presidents that have been hired in the last 2 to 3 years, and at some point discuss whether their contracts should be retroactively extended so they also have that five-year grace period. I have difficulty approving something that's good for one and not good for the other, especially with, you know, the hires at Mayville and at Valley City. And I think it also would impact Williston because I think we have to have fairness on this. I do support moving to 5 years. That has come up in discussion with some of our interviews over the last, over Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. And I'll discuss that a little bit later. But I think it's a good move to go to 5 years.
This is Dr. Dreikseth, CCF. I would just like to make a comment that I was surprised that it wasn't on the agenda, so I just heard about it in the last 10 minutes. So kind of trying to, you know, wrap my head around this five-year change. The faculty across the state did have, as you, some of you do recall, in the past when many of the presidents were offered the opportunity to be tenured. This seems kind of close to that type of situation. So I would, as CCF, again, just finding out about it 10 minutes ago, say that we probably wouldn't approve that, but I would like to bring it to the Council of College Faculties and see if we would like to write a letter on that issue. I don't know how the staff feels about it.
Yeah, this is Risa, and I was going to make a similar comment as Dr. Dragseth that I think this is something that staff would like to discuss just to find their viewpoint on it, since obviously the presidents and the role of the presidents have a significant impact on the staff function, so would like to bring it back to our staff groups as well for their stakeholder input.
Chair Hacker, this is Dan Trainer. Can that be done? Can that, since this is a first reading, can that be done within the time before our November meeting?
Yes, my sense is all of the councils will have an opportunity over the course of the next 3 weeks when they regularly meet to consider this. And I just want to mention that the governance committee, which was an open and public meeting, did contemplate this change, and the governance committee did not support the change from 3 to 5 years. So it has been a publicly discussed item. The councils will have 3 more weeks to review once again, because this is, as Member Trainer mentioned, this is a first read only.
Chair Hacker, this is Casey again. Could I would ask that if you think it's appropriate to get input from the presidents?
I'm going to defer to the chancellor. I know that this topic was discussed in the governance committee, and the chancellor did weigh in. I'm not certain if that included feedback from the president, so I'm going to defer to the chancellor for the moment.
Thank you, Chair Hacker. We talked with the cabinet about providing any feedback to me if they felt there should be a change to their contract terms and whatnot in the context of this. It was never presented to them about giving the next new hire a five-year contract, but I would anticipate that Dr. Ryan is correct, that from a matter of equity, it would certainly, as obviously in the cabinet, there could be some contentious issues. And if a president knows that they're up for review, but someone they're disputing with has 4 more years to go, because as you know, the cabinet produces many of the policies that come to you, that it could be a material effect on people's willingness to weigh in on issues that, you know, have a disproportionate longevity for one president versus the other. So we did not specifically talk about five-year contract, but I can, consult with the cabinet and get their feedback. But I would anticipate equity would be probably a primary concern. I can also say this. No president has pushed for a five-year contract. I think I understand the faculty and the staff perspective. We just come out of 4 years of budget cuts, huge reductions in staff and faculty levels, and we certainly wouldn't want the perception that the presidents feel privileged in some way, that this is purely a way to enhance recruiting, I think, at the senior executive levels. It is not anywhere a statement of the relative value of presidents versus faculty and staff. So I just want to be sure that's out there.
Ms. Casey, again, I do think we need to be aware of the fact that this comes up in interviews, and it's an issue that at least needs good discussion and input. I guess I would like to hear from sitting presidents how they feel about it.
This is Dr. Dragseth again, and I can only imagine if I were offered a contract, we want a 3- or 5-year contract, and we can only imagine how the presidents would feel. I don't think it's possible from the staff or faculty end, but perhaps the board office could do a evaluation of other contracts across the country. If 5 is the norm by 90%, or 3 the norm, I think that would be valuable to have for the next meeting.
At this point, Chancellor, we'll certainly, I think in the context of this search firm that's presently going, I think we can reach out. They have a massive database of all this and see if they have something they can provide us for. So we'll look into that.
I mean, Dan Traynor. One of the things I'd ask the board to consider is if a candidate for president of UND or Dickinson or Bismarck came to the interview and said, I'm only going to stay for 3 years, would we be more apt or less apt to hire them? I think we should expect that whomever we hire for a first term as a president's position, unless they're an interim, stay at least 5 years. It provides stability to the campus and some certainty. And if we're not going to have that expectation, I think that that's going to be a problem. And I'm assuming, Dr. Ryan, that when this was brought up in interviews, the candidates would prefer a 5-year contract.
It didn't come up in all the interviews, but in the interview where it did come up, that was specifically raised as to why the contract was so short.
Chair Hacker, Member Mahalik here. I guess I'd like to comment on that now that I am co-chair of the BSC search. I will tell you that my initial reaction to extend it from 3 to 5 years would be negative. I think 5 years is a long time in today's world. I appreciate the comments of Member Ryan and Member Traynor. So I guess as we move forward, and maybe Member Ryan will talk about this a little bit more as he discusses the UND search, but I'd be more inclined to know, what is typical in the industry. If we had candidates where they didn't raise a question about length of the contract, and those that did, I mean, there's a lot surrounding this, and I'd like to have a little better handle on an understanding as I move into that search. But as it sits, that's a long time in today's world, and I would think as we hire any president of the universities that the searchers are a part of, we hope to have a sense for their expectations of length of service and time to stay here. I also don't want to handcuff us as a university system with a contract that's out there for 5 years. So I think there's a lot to be discussed and thought about before we move this forward to 5 years. Thank you.
Chair Hacker, this is Casey again. Understand that most of the interviews, none of these people have seen a contract.
Okay.
Other than those who've asked about, how long is the contract. So in general, it's not a big issue. When I discussed this with Member Traynor, I was concerned about duration of the 5-year contract, but as with the 3-year contract, if there's a problem at year 2 for anyone, the board has to make a decision. Whether you're there for 3 years or 5 years, you're obligated compensation unless there's things that were done that shouldn't have been done and there's rules for firing. You're obligated to 1 year of a contract. So, I mean, that to me says, okay, we're not going to be paying someone for 3 years of a contract if we let them go after 2 years. I don't know if that speaks to what you're bringing up, Tim, but
I appreciate that. That's I'm processing and thinking through. Okay, I appreciate that.
We're only, Tim, this is Dan Traynor. We're only on the hook for 1 year.
Okay.
And we can, whether we have a 3-year contract or a 5-year contract, if the president is not a good fit and not performing, the job up to the expectations of the board, we can terminate the contract at any time and only pay 1 year. And that doesn't change if it's a 3-year or a 5-year term. But the benefit of the 5-year term is that it gives an expectation that we want that president to be around that campus for some extended period of time. And the other thing is, all we're debating right now is a policy change. That does not mean that the contract itself for Bismarck State or for Dickinson or any other institution needs to be 5 years. It just, this policy change will allow us to be 5 years if we so choose.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is the chance if I could jump in, Chair Hacker, just briefly to follow up on Member Mihalik's comment.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to caution the idea that we sign a 5-year commitment contract, but without giving any basis in the sense of terminated for cause, that we could just walk away from, you know, 4 more years of a contract. I think that would send a very mixed signal to any future candidate. So in case any of them are listening to this or whatnot, that North Dakota generally, from my understanding, having looked at this, has honored, you know, full contracts. And even, quite frankly, seldom not renewed contracts. There was a case a couple of years ago where there was a delay of a few months. But so I would just say, given our culture here, we generally honor contracts. We don't even fight too hard against the renewal process. So I think we'd be prepared if we did say 5 years. Generally, given past traditions here, we would be honoring 5 years. Though I concede the technical legal point that at any point we could stop paying after 1 year.
Chair Hacker, Ms. Casey, I would recommend, it's pretty obvious that this needs a lot of discussion. I don't think this is the forum, nor do we have all the right people to have that discussion. I think the fact that we put it out as a first reading by no means indicates that it's going to be approved on a second reading. So I would just say, I don't know if it needs a vote on first reading. If it does, then we can find out where people sit. But I think to continue discussing this any further is just taking time without resolution.
So, Chair Hacker, this is Nesset. May I have a moment?
Absolutely, Ms. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate Dr. Ryan's comments there, but I would like to, first I'd like some clarity. The motion that is on the floor, is this for approval of the entire document, the entire contract, or that's how I understand it. It is a policy first read vote on the entire document before us, not just paragraph 3.
The motion on the table right now, which was moved by Trainer, seconded by Ryan, was first read to change from 3 to 5 years in a policy 305.1 and did not contain the contract. We haven't taken that part up yet. So this discussion is pretty limited to the from the 3 to the 5 years.
So this is not the entire policy reading number, first read policy.
Correct. This is first read of only changing from 3 to 5 years up to of the contract length on the initial contracts.
Okay. I will just briefly state that I am opposed to that, mostly for the reasons that I think that you put into a 5-year contract that is too long, that is not the real world, and I do not think setting up a perception that we are putting a contract out there or we are actually providing a 5-year contract is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Nesset. Any other committee, any other board members? I just want to weigh in, and I've been through a number of contract renewals, and I think there's a broader discussion to be had. We have challenges within contract renewals, which are this awkward kind of 1-year renewal, but they're done in advance, so it becomes a 2-year kind of process. I think there's a bigger discussion to be had if contract length is what's going to drive the commitment from an applicant to serve the system or their institution. And so I also, with Member Nesset, don't believe that us drafting policies to state that you're committed or you're not based on 3 years or 5 years, I don't think that really defines whether or not we have the right leader for an institution. Also, I've been through a number of these renewals and contract negotiations, and I've yet to see the political will of the State Board of Higher Education to remove somebody for cause. So without removing somebody for cause, if we don't have the political will to do that, then we're stuck for 5 years. And 5 years in my world is a long time. And so I, too, again, this did not make it through the governance committee. I sit on that committee, and that's my position. But is there any other feedback?
Yes, Chair Hacker.
And I'd like to make a few comments if I can. And understanding, of course, that I am a non-voting member on this, I understand this was discussed at the governance committee, as was mentioned, but I'm really hesitant to see the board go through with voting on something as a first read when it wasn't specifically put on the agenda beforehand for the input and discussion. And it sounds like a lot of the stakeholders that should have been involved in this conversation haven't been to this point. So I would be kind of hesitant to see going forward with the first reading on that. And the second point, as far as the conversations regarding we can always terminate someone or pay them out for the year, that sort of thing. I vividly recall several years ago, and I don't believe anybody currently on the board was a part at this time, but when the Chancellor Ham Shirvani was being hired, I was at that meeting and remember a very similar discussion of, well, if we don't like him, we can always pay him out and, you know, be rid of it. And I just think that was, if you have those concerns at the forefront, I think that that's kind of a not good road to go down, and it should be a little bit more clear up front rather than just thinking, well, we can always get out of it if it doesn't work. So that's just my input. Thank you.
Chair Hacker, Board Member DeShock. I think the comment was made that 5 years is a long time for board members. It's a lifetime for students at these institutions. And so when we talk about a contract of that length, if we have a candidate that throughout their tenure isn't in the service of students, that will go through the entire lifetime of that student's tenure at that institution. So with comments made by other of my colleagues about the nature of this being first read without a lot of supporting documentation, I would agree with many of my colleagues and say that I'm concerned with voting yes on this.
Okay, thank you. Board members, any other feedback? We're going to limit the conversation to board members at this point. And hearing none, we will move to call the roll on the motion to change 305.1 from 3 years to 5 years. Christy, if you'd call the roll.
Dr. Ryan?
No.
Ms. Nesset?
No.
Mr. Mihalik?
No.
Mr. Traynor?
Yes.
Mr. DeShack?
No.
Board Chair Hacker?
No. I just want to express my appreciation for our ability as a board to tackle big topics like this in an open discussion in public. This is really the good work of a public board to contemplate these things. And I would hope that the chancellor, along with the cabinet and the presidents, can start to review and discuss more in depth this continued topic. It seems to me that there is interest to have continued discussion around the initial contract length, renewals, et cetera. And so, Chancellor, if you would you know, keep this conversation going, I appreciate it.
Yes, sir, will do.
With that, we also have a presidential contract.
Statement?
Yes, sir.
This is Casey. I don't think that contract change needs to happen for where we're going with the UND search, so that's not going to be the issue with who we ultimately hire to be president of UND. So I'm totally comfortable with where things are at right now with the contract.
Chair Hacker, this is Dan Traynor. I move the first reading of presidential contract as indicated on the agenda.
Okay, thank you, Member Traynor. There's a motion on the draft presidential contract as the format for new, not renewals, but new initial contracts as a contract template.
And Chair Hacker, let me modify my motion, that the contract is the proposed contract from the State Board of Higher Education, but may be negotiated and modified by the Chancellor and the President of the State Board through negotiations with the eventual candidate.
This is Casey. I'm going to second this for discussion, and I would then like to say that it's pretty apparent that this contract is significant, needs a lot of discussion, and I want to hear why the committee voted against it.
But the committee voted for it, Casey.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was.
The committee supported it.
Okay. I'm sorry. Missed that.
Yeah, the committee made a couple of modifications to the contract, which were more. You know, there's a lot of discussion around this contract regarding carrots and sticks, and the committee did remove several of the sticks, I guess. Is the way to put it. Would you agree with Member Traynor?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Some of the changes also were to preserve board authority and board autonomy, and so those were taken into consideration by the governance committee.
Member Mahalik here. So, Member Traynor, most of what I'm seeing as I've read through the contract seems to be, and maybe Eric, you can answer this, pretty much a boilerplate. I mean, from a typical contract. I mean, if I'm missing something, you can point me in the right direction. But from my read through, it all seems to be pretty standard.
Tim, my understanding of the contract is for the most part. A restatement of either state law or state board policy. There is some boilerplate contained within the document, but there are certain provisions. I believe paragraph 7 and paragraph 11 that have some leeway for negotiation. I did have Mr. Olson prepare an annotated version of this document that identified either the state board policy or state law. That from which this was derived, and the reason why, as we talked about in the governance committee, we want some of those state laws or state policies spelled out in the contract is, as we've seen with a recent episode concerning conflicts of interest, sometimes people don't look at the particular policy. So if we have the information contained within the contract, at least the presidential candidate knows what they're getting into.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Hacker?
Go ahead, Member Neffet.
I have a question on our summary sheet on item number 10. I see the Chancellor's recommendation based on the Cabinet feedback is do not approve at this point, that this needs significant more work on it. If that is correct, Chancellor, is that your position on this document?
Member Nessa, the Chair Hacker, the position that and again, you have 11 different chief executives, and they were all being very helpful. And again, for the record, none of them have pushed to have longer contracts for themselves. They were really looking at how this would help resolve really just one issue, and that was a president who within 15 months of being here was out on the job market. And so and feel free, any president who wants to add to this, but so synthesizing all their input, it was evolve the contract, keep a very brief contract with one additional paragraph, essentially with the buyout language, much like Colorado had, and then continue to evolve this, because there was a sense that you know, we're up against a very tight timeline and want to do no harm on, you know, a contract vehicle that has produced, you know, Dr. Scogin for 12 years, Dr. Bashani for a decade, Dr. Hagen for more than that, that there has been a lot of contracts highly successful. So that was kind of the position. No one's going to fall on their sword if the board wants to push through with this longer contract, but there was the acknowledged point about policy changes and does the contract have to change. I defer to the lawyers on that, but that's why I stated what I did.
Chancellor, thank you. And in light of that, I just see an awful lot of issues that are still to be discussed, and I don't even think that this is far enough along for approval on a first read. So I'm going to ask that we send it back when we come to the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Nesset and Chancellor. Any other feedback? Questions?
This is Casey,
hearing
member
none.
Chair Hacker. Again, I don't think that the contract that's being discussed needs to be in place for what we do with UND. And that being said, I do agree with Member Nesset that I think this is controversial. I think it needs more discussion, and I don't think we need to rush it. But at the same time, it needs to be done, and I appreciate the work that Member Traynor has done.
Thank you. Any other comments or feedback? Otherwise, we will call the roll in a moment. Hearing none, Christy, if you'd call the roll.
Ms. Nesset?
No.
Dr. Ryan?
No.
Mr. Mihalik?
No.
Mr. Traynor?
Yes.
Mr. Dishak?
No.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. Again, just because a topic does not receive the endorsement of the board in a vote doesn't mean that we're going to stop working on these things. And again, I'll ask the Chancellor to continue to look at this along with the renewals and the 3 to 5 year change in a holistic form and possibly establish a task force so that we can get to a point where everybody is comfortable. So thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to item number 14.
16.
I got two agendas I'm looking at, sorry.
Good morning, Chair Hacker and
Member. We're on to item 16. Yeah, Ms. Redman.
Yes, this is Carol Redman from the NDUS Compliance Office, bringing to you the amended version of Policy 308.4, Conflict of Interest, that's coming before the Board today to be considered on a first read. This policy was last considered by this body in 1993, so it's definitely time for a look at any rate, but per state auditor recommendations, we're amending this policy to include some additional details regarding types of conflicts that would be financial as well as relational, clarifying requirements of an actual or known conflict versus the appearance of a conflict, adding the process for determining recusal and abstention requirements for an actual conflict, and requiring annual updates to conflict of interest disclosure forms for certain administrators and state board members. The objective of this policy is to provide guidelines relative to potential and actual conflicts of interest, which encourage disclosure and transparency. These board members will be able to participate, and contracts and transactions may still move forward if conflicts are disclosed. This policy has substantial revisions, so I'd like to highlight some of the major changes before we open for questions. The first paragraph is mainly definitions and introduction. The second paragraph in the application of the policy, 2A, discusses guidelines for employees, and 2B includes guidelines in regards to state board members. Much of this parallels requirements in North Dakota Century Code and echoes some legal requirements. Section 3 is specifically prohibited interests and activities. This is mainly the same as the prior the prior policy draft, just with a few cleanup housekeeping items. Section 4 is the requirement for annual updates to disclosure forms for state board members, the chancellor, vice chancellor, and institution president. 5 and 6 are just housekeeping in the end as far as testing violations and the need for policies and procedures at the institutional level. This policy has been discussed in senior staff and in councils over the last several months. The governance committee has looked at this policy more than once and did recommend approval at their October meeting. So with that, I would stand for questions and also invite Assistant Attorney General Mr. Olson for any questions as well on this State Board Policy 208.4, Conflict of Interest, for First Read.
Thank you, Carol.
Chair Hacker, members of the committee, this is Eric Olson. I just want to clarify that this policy is also being renumbered from the 600 series to the 300 series. Just that clarification.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Eric or Carol?
Ms. Casey, I would move approval for first reading.
Nesset, second.
Thank you.
Nick, this is Dan Traynor. I think that I appreciate some of the changes that were made to this draft policy respecting other ethical obligations of professional or other business persons, but I'm concerned about the heavy-handedness of the policy and its particular application to board members. To require board members to disclose certain things, I think is problematic in some instances. And I think that the decision of whether or not a board member is allowed to not vote on a matter puts the board member in a very difficult spot. So I do not support this change in the policy. I think it is I think it presents situations where board members will be in trouble in the future or simply following their either illegal or ethical obligations owed to a client in the case of a lawyer or perhaps to a customer. To require disclosure sometimes I think is not appropriate, and at least in my profession, as to who a party is working for or a potential transaction. And a board member, I think we've generally used our good judgment in deciding when or when not to vote, and it has not been an issue. So I don't think that this revision is needed, and I do not support it.
Thank you, Member Traynor. Appreciate the feedback, and I do think that the Governance Committee did do really good work here to try to make this as palatable as possible. And I think I agree with Member Traynor. The simple disclosure may actually violate some level of confidentiality between whether it's the attorney or a board member and a client. Just that disclosure could effectuate, you know, a breach of the confidentiality between that person and their client. And I think that's what you're alluding to. Is that correct, Dan?
That is correct. Okay. I was confronted with this in June where I knew that I was going to have a potential conflict, and I have ethical obligations related to that, and I think that in part is what drove this issue as far as requiring people to identify their conflict. I don't think that we should be required in all instances to do that.
Chair Hacker.
So the board members understand you will not be allowed to simply abstain from a vote. Go ahead, Eric.
I apologize. This is Eric Olson from the Attorney General's Office. Chair Hacker, members of the board, I appreciate Member Traynor's concerns, and I share them as a former attorney in private practice. The language in paragraph 2B regarding SBHU members is required by state law. That process is already required by state law, and that was vetted through my office during the process of taking this through the governance committee. So while I understand the concerns, and I'm open to having additional discussions in terms of ways to protect clients, but this is just where the law is in the state. So that's, I agree with Dan that there are concerns with this. This is a very broad policy. It sort of follows along with the state's very strong open records and open meetings laws in terms of disclosure and sunshine. And that does bear some concerns for professions that rely on confidentiality as a significant part. But that this is the law as it's been set forth. And that was by through discussions with my office, and I thank Member Traynor for helping to initiate those, there was that additional line added to that SBHU members would not be required to violate an ethical obligation imposed by a state or federal entity. So that is a so that was a change made in direct response to those concerns. But what we're looking at here is state law, and they're really, unfortunately, I wish I had better news about that, but there just isn't a lot of wiggle room under state law here. And the reason for laying it out so explicitly here is to basically to help provide disclosure and to help allow members to see more clearly what is required by state law. That was sort of the idea here.
Okay, thank you, Eric. So maybe a board, any other questions?
Yeah, just then a quick understanding. I'm sorry, Chair Hacker, Member Mahalik here. So Eric, I mean, you said there are other ways to address this or not? This is black and white as it sits here.
This is pretty black and white. This is a procedure that's been followed, that's been recommended by the Attorney General based on North Dakota Century Code Section 44-04-22 and also a number of court decisions and interpretations of those by the Attorney General, which govern the actions of public employees as a matter of law. So that is how this is based. There is, I would like to be clear, that disclosure does not have to be terribly detailed. Board members still do, the state still relies on board members to use their best judgment and to follow the rules and the laws as they're set forth. So if a member, you know, is concerned that they may have a direct and substantial personal or pecuniary interest under the statute, certainly you'd be able to feel free to give me a call. We can discuss ways to address that. If in the instance that Dan or that Member Traynor is specifically concerned about with respect to an attorney client, the disclosure would need to be no more than in the case of an attorney who is a partner at a law firm who would stand to directly benefit based on the business generated from a client. The disclosure could look something along the lines of, I have a client whose interest may be affected by this policy, and I stand to personally gain as part of that representation, so I would need to, so I submit that I have a conflict of interest. And this policy still permits the board to waive conflicts, if as is done very commonly in the legislature, and then there are other potential ways to address this issue in terms of where someone feels that they cannot vote on an issue as a matter of personal or professional ethics, even if it doesn't arise to this level. But that's not covered specifically by the law here.
Okay.
So Eric and Tim, this is Dan Traynor. Let's play that out a bit. Let's say that I make that disclosure, and then it's up to the board to decide whether or not I waive the conflict. But the fact that I've identified that I have a client who's interested in a transaction may be indeed a component of the prohibition regarding the representation. The same thing for a banker. A banker may have a customer, and the fact that somebody is a customer of a bank may not be an item that may be disclosed because of banking regulations. A doctor may have a patient,
right,
and the doctor is not allowed to talk about the fact of who their patients are in addition to whether or what they might be seeing them for. So this creates a very difficult problem for board members.
Yeah, I guess that, to your point, I'm sorry, Dan, that, you know, my concern is I may not know that potentially a client in Bismarck is bidding on a state project and have no knowledge of it, but as you stated, that's a concern. I wouldn't be able to breach that confidentiality, and so, okay, I see. Okay.
Again,
thank you.
Chair Hacker, Member Mihalik, if you'd allow me to respond, I think I can clarify something on that.
Yep, on the known conflicts. Yep, go right ahead.
Yep. So the policy is specifically written in response to a concern raised by Member by Chair Hacker previously that this only covers known conflicts, meaning conflicts which are known to the board member at the time. So this Member Mihalik, if there was a client of your institution that was involved in a matter, but you're unaware of it, that would not be a conflict that would be subject to this policy because it would not be a conflict under the definitions of the policy. Now, with respect to the issue of being able to abstain, the policy still does explicitly allow for abstention. That's in the last sentence, but it does require that the state laws require that a vote be cast with a majority if there is a majority on the vote. So in a sense there is an abstention, but the duty to vote still applies. So the vote is just automatically applied to the majority if there is a majority, and that would be noted in the minutes as being cast by rule as opposed to being cast by the member.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Packer, this is Nesset.
Yes, Kathy.
I just want to point out, I think this is a good, buildup of this policy. This is directed, remember, it's not just board members. This is NDUS officials and all employees, which means all campus members are included in this. I think it gives some clarity to this, and I think it gives a little more substance to it. It is not, doing anything outside the norm of our existing laws. And we as board members know this when we sign our oath of office. We're aware of this. So I think that this, if anything, just is a good policy strengthening. And with that, thank you.
Thank you, Member Nesset.
Chair Hacker, this is the Chancellor. Could I make one comment also in support of this?
Sure.
Yeah, a couple of years ago we had some difficult votes pertaining to presidential renewals or whatnot, and the student, I remember at the time, was very conflicted in a very difficult spot. I think that, as the attorney pointed out, paragraph 2B, you can still abstain, and quite frankly, you can do several excursions here. You know, if it's a 3-3 tie, your abstention will not throw it into a majority. It only is putting your vote in the category of an existing majority. So I think this still provides plenty of protection for board members, including the student, can abstain and not have a material effect on the vote. And as Eric points out, it'll even be recorded in the minutes that they're voted by rule. So I think this meets the urgent need of updating this policy and also providing, I think, protections for everybody concerned.
Thank you, Chancellor. Any other questions or feedback, board members? Hearing none, we'll move to call the roll. Christy?
Mr. Traynor?
No.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Mihalik?
Yes.
Ms. Nesset?
Yes.
Mr. Dishak?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. That moves us down to item number 17, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Hacker, members of the board. My name is Lisa Johnson. I serve as the Vice Chancellor of Academic and Student Affairs for the University System. I'll be presenting the next four policies for second read for the board's consideration. The first being State Board of Higher Ed Policy 307.1, Institution Organization Notice and Approval. We had audit findings that suggested that our office examine our policy related to the creation of a new school, a college, not internal to the college, but like a branch campus or a college maybe in another site, an academy, institute, or center. The proposed edits then would create a process similar to which we use in the Academic Affairs Council to approve new academic programs. That is a two-step approval process, the first being an exploratory phase, followed by a more formal approval to include the hiring of faculty or the acceptance of students, but a more formal process. And so for clarification, this does not pertain to routine organizational changes such as a merger of departments or divisions or a bifurcation of a department or division at a particular institution. And so you can see in item 1, A and B lays out that exploratory phase that allows the campus to sort of initiate. And it also provides an opportunity for other institutions to step forward if they, too, have a center or something that serves a state or regional need that the proposer might have been unaware of. And then second being the formal approval stage. So, again, just seeking the board's approval for your support for board policy 307.1 is presented today.
Ms. Casey, I move approval.
Second, Deshaak.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. And there's a motion and a second. Christy, if you call the roll.
Mr. Deshaak?
Yes.
Mr. Mahalik?
Yes.
Ms. Neffitt?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you. Ms. Johnson, if you want to continue on number 18.
Sure. The proposed edit to policy 511 is relatively straightforward. It would permit campuses to remove the required safety and security questions from the application for admission, with the understanding that campuses would solicit this information or other pertinent questions if appropriate prior to admitting a student into a residence hall or a specific program of study. And just examples would be those that maybe have licensure or working with particular populations, such as educators, those working in nursing or pharmacy programs. So those are examples of where they might ask that prior to admission to a particular program. Again, the edit is just to change the word shall require the disclosure, but changing the language to may require the disclosure of the criminal history information. And you can see that in item section 1 of policy 511. I stand for questions. If none, I'm just seeking the board's support for the proposed edit to policy 511.
Member Mahalik, move approval of policy 511 for second reading.
Trainer, second.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for the good explanation. Christy, if you call the roll.
Ms. Neffitt?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Mr. Mahalik?
Yes.
Mr. Deshaak?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes, thank you. Lisa, if you want to go to 605.1.
State Board of Higher Ed Policy 605.1, titled Academic Freedom and Tenure and Academic Appointments, really is a pretty straightforward edit that is just adding the full name of the guiding principles that we referenced when we were working on our free speech policy, and then further capitalizing the name of two professional organizations that were originally listed as acronyms, and so just added for clarity while we had the policy open. Again, I just present the proposed edits to policy 605.1 for the board's consideration today.
Chair Hacker, I move approval.
Second, Deshaak.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. This is not the same academic freedom discussion that's occurring with regard to what students might wear to a political event, is it? That topic is still working its way through?
Chair Hacker, members of the board, note, policy 605.1, it was related to free speech that we that had legislative consequences. The political activities was 308, policy 308, I forget the number. 308.3, that is currently tabled and still under discussion with the students and working through that. So they are separate. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Christy, if you call the roll.
Ms. Neffitt?
Yes.
Mr. Deshaak?
Yes.
Mr. Mahalik?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Yes, thank you. Ms. Johnson, item number 20.
Yes, Board Policy 980 entitled Alcoholic Beverages. The proposed edit really deleted a requirement that we had stated. It was probably a misstatement that required the chancellor to adopt policies regarding alcoholic beverages on a campus. In reality, each campus is federally and statutorily required to develop their own policies regarding alcoholic beverages on their respective campuses and have been doing so since their inception. Obviously, their policies have been refined as the Drug-Free Schools and Communities Act of 1989 went through. The campuses worked diligently to adhere to that and promote and publicize those policies annually. And I look at Caleb, I know both he and I are students at colleges and universities, and we do receive that notification annually. So this is really a housekeeping detail and just reaffirming that the campuses are responsible for their respective campus policies around alcoholic beverages, and not it's not under directly under the purview of the chancellor. So lastly, I present policy 918 and ask for the board's support for the proposed edit today.
Casey, Chair Hacker, I'd move approval.
Second, Member Mahalik.
Great. Thank you very much. Christy, if you call the roll.
Mr. Dishak?
Yes.
Ms. Nesbitt?
Yes.
Dr. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Mahalik?
Yes.
Mr. Trainer?
Yes.
Board Chair Hacker?
Yes. Thank you for the great work, Board. Those are our action items for the day, and we're going to move into reports. And a lot of heavy lifting going on up at UND. And Dr. Ryan, if you'd give us an update on your presidential search, and sounds like you've had a busy week up there.
We have. Thank you, Chair Hacker. We started out with actually 61 candidates, moved it down to 12 to do interviews. One of the 12 pulled out, so we interviewed 11 people, 7 on Tuesday and 4 yesterday. I must say I'm very impressed with the group. We have another meeting of the committee this afternoon for a relatively short meeting to make the recommendations of how many of this group of 11 we will move forward. And that will then lead to those people being willing to have their name released, go public, and come to UND for an intensive campus interview during November. And then these people would all be considered campus, you know, interviews, basically finalists. And then from that group, we could choose to move on the whole group or portions of that group to come and interview with the board of directors meeting on December 3rd. I would have to say that the quality of this group is extremely good, and I think we need to thank the legislature for passing the legislation that allowed individuals to keep their name private until they were in the last group to be moved to campus. So very exciting. I think you'll hear, I would say this, as it stands right now, not finalized by the committee, we will be moving 6 members to come to UND campus, which will be a bit of work for Terry Meyer and NDUS office and also for UND campus. But I think UND will find out that this is an extremely good group, and I hope that with the people we're moving forward, that they will be there to the end. I'm optimistic that you will bring at least 3 names, maybe 4 names, to the higher ed board in December, such that one of those 4 would be an excellent present for UND. So very pleased with it. Names will come out after later this afternoon or maybe tomorrow after AGB Jim McCormick has the opportunity to let the candidates know that they've been moved forward, reassure them that, you know, their name's going to be out there and they have to agree again that this is what's going to happen. we will not, although I think it's a good idea that we show them a contract before the Higher Ed Board meeting in December, the contract that we will show them, unless changed in November, will be what we presently have. And again, I don't see that as being an issue. I don't know if that's been shared previously ahead of time, but needs to be done so that they can look at it and have ability to talk with their counsel or anyone else that may give them help in looking at a contract. So that's it for any questions, but you know what? There isn't a whole lot more I can tell you.
Chair Hacker, Member Ryan, if I may, this is Eric Olson. I just wanted to clarify that the names that are, or that the candidates move forward this afternoon are not considered finalists for the purposes of North Dakota Century Code 44-04-18.27. Just want to clarify that to make clear for the record.
Chair Hacker, thank you, Eric. I wanted to see if I could slide that one by you. I'm good to see that you're listening, and I knew it when I said it, but yes, you are totally correct. But all outstanding candidates, I'll leave it at that. We felt they were good enough to be invited to campus.
Great. And the statute, Eric, it's at our, if we would like to disclose the candidates, as Dr. Ryan is talking about, it fundamentally becomes public when they come to campus. The statute does not limit our ability to make those names public earlier in the process. It allows us to maintain confidentiality to the final three. Is that not correct?
That's correct. The way the statute works is that it applies to the application materials that have been submitted, and that is also the basis for the search committee to go into executive session to discuss candidates, is through the discussion of their application materials. So there's nothing, so that with the candidate's consent, there's nothing preventing those names from being made public or for those individuals providing any or all of their application materials directly. But the application materials submitted as part of that search process are confidential until finalists are named pursuant to that section, and then those application materials are publicly available.
And this is an important topic for the board members to know and understand, as Dr. Ryan and I and Eric have been discussing how we present the candidate information and materials for your review, so that you can see and watch the videos of the interviews. You can read their full document of information that's presented about each candidate. You will have an opportunity, because we have a very limited amount of time, unfortunately, with these candidates, which is about an hour, and we're selecting a president of one of our universities. So it's a very major decision that you're going to make. We are identifying ways to provide you additional information. The videos and recordings, for instance, of all of the interviews, and so that you'll have plenty of information, even though we only have an hour with the individual candidates, so that you can review those finalists in greater depth than just their CV, for instance, and then what you were able to glean from a one-hour interview. So it will be a robust amount of information that you'll have an opportunity to review on the finalists. Thank you, Dr. Ryan. Appreciate all your work. Just as a reminder, you know, we have 11 institutions, and that means we're going to be under 1 to 2 searches every year based on average tenure. So this is not abnormal for us. We have searches all the time. Appreciate the work of the search committee. Thank you, Dr. Ryan. That will move us into committee reports. I believe Ms. Loiters is out of country. Was there a staff member of the system office that would like to give a committee report on academic affairs?
Yep. Oh, I, Chair Hacker, Member DeShock, I actually have got the report. So we discussed the Train ND plan here today. That was passed from committee. We had a slew of academic programs or requests come forward, broken into sort of two categories, one category being cyber and robotics that we're seeing at a couple institutions, and the second half being a piece of behavioral education and empowering educators in our state to deal with behavioral problems, mental health issues, and conditions of that nature. And then finally, we had an organizational change come from the University of North Dakota to create an Institute for Public Policy and Business Analytics to propel sort of experiential learning inside the College of Business there, the Nistler College of Business.
Wonderful. Thank you, Member Bishak. Appreciate the update. Audit Committee, Member Nesset.
Chair Hacker, thank you very much. The board is current with the work of the audit committee. There's one other item that I would like to make the board aware of, and that is the move of audit and compliance from the system office, 10th floor in the Capitol, over to BSC to the Meadowlark building. This move was requested a while ago. We've been working on this move. This means that our audit and compliance, rather than sharing one office at the system office, will now have separate offices, as will their staff. It will allow for additional room efficiencies, and it will also allow for the alignment, the best use of the system office for upcoming positions that are needed to be filled. So that move happens today. So Laura and Carol's, Ms. Redmond, Ms. Schratt, will move over to the BSC campus. So that is the complete report. Thank you.
It is wonderful to hear. Thank you. And the Mahalik.
Budget and Finance Committee update. On the agenda today on the board consent, items number 3 through 9 really were the content of our meeting. I don't know if there's any questions since they've been passed. The only other thing that I would offer, excuse me, is that I did talk to our institutions and just to remind them that we are in an extremely low interest rate. If there's opportunity for refinancing to rework loans or debt or so on and so forth, it's a great time to take a look, and you know, we're willing to help and support them with that endeavor if it is in front of them. And that's it.
Great, great point. Thank you very much. Member Traynor, Governance Committee.
Thank you, Chair Hacker. The majority of our committee discussion involved the presidential contract that we've discussed earlier at this meeting and the change or potential change from a 3-year to a 5-year term for the initial contract. We also discussed the conflict of interest policy that was an item of discussion at this meeting, and the board self-evaluation or prioritization of board self-evaluation item that I believe was on the consent agenda. We discussed a possible change to policy 308.3 regarding political activities, but it was our understanding that Lisa Johnson and Eric Olson would be meeting with the Student Association after our governance meeting, and we felt that consideration should be given to the position of students with regard to the proposed change regarding political activities. And we also discussed advocacy for a chancellor's contract and just briefly reviewed a proposed bill change that would make discussion regarding renewal of the chancellor's contract private and not open for a public meeting, similar to how presidential contracts are handled. And that is the extent of our discussion at the Governance Committee.
Great, thank you. Dr. Ryan, Research Committee.
Yes, I want to thank President Pashani, President Nguyen, Vice President for Research, Dr. Jane Hsu at NDSU, and Vice President for Research at UND, Dr. Mahalik. They have come together. We didn't have a meeting in October because they're working so well together that they wanted more time to lay out where things are going to go. And at this point in time, I feel we're ahead of schedule with where I wanted to see the committee, because we've moved through whatever irritated NDSU or UND in the past about the other organization has been left in the past, and we're looking to the future. So I'm very excited with what's going on, and I think we're going to have a meeting next month to clarify how we need to move ahead with combining research and doing research to have a presentation ready, hopefully by January, as it relates to the Legacy Fund. So that's our present goal, and things are really moving in a good way, and I congratulate both institutions for their willingness to see the big picture.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan. That's really wonderful to hear. And committee chairs, this is, you know, we're going to continue to have these committee reports. I think it's a great way for us to share information about the work that's occurring within the committees and the institutions and the system office. And it gives us kind of a preview of things to come so that we can be thinking and contemplating big ticket items. And so appreciate the reports and the work that everybody puts in to prepare and provide the reports. We'll continue to do this as a positive way of sharing information amongst the board members. And so thank you all for your leadership of your committees. With that, we'll move on to the Chancellor's report.
Thank you, Chair Hacker. We just have four items I'll brief you on, but let you know lots and lots of work is going on, as you just saw some of the briefings of. Additionally, work continues on four initiatives that came out of the Cabinet, the Legacy Fund study options. We've got some time till February to present to the Legislative Committee. But we will be coming that to you well before that. The Math Pathways work, the digital programs, providing an integrated way for North Dakota students to get digital programming. And then also with regard to online, I've already had a first meeting with Western Governors, University President, and a follow-up with staff. That was something that we took on just to explore partnerships with them. So I won't go into more detail, but lots of information I can provide separately with board members if they're interested on those studies. I'll just go through the first one and then stop if there's questions, if that's OA Chair Hacker. So the first item that at least made the cut, if you want to go in more detailed discussion, is the NDSCS action plan. There were basically 34 action steps that came out of the combined NDSCS proposal, and then the additions from my office. As you recall, instead of doing a temporary system oversight, we just asked the Chancellor's office to oversee the implementation of the auditor's findings. And so of the 34, 17 are fully complete by mutual agreement of NDSCS and our office. So we're at the 50% point at this point, and we're continuing to work on the next 50%, and we'll just keep you updated and glad to entertain, direct calls that board members have on many of the items. It's a three-page spreadsheet I'm holding in my hand, which Member DeShalk can see. So it's quite detailed. So I'll stop at that point. If anybody has a specific question, we can try to answer.
Chancellor, so we're about halfway through the action plan. What's kind of the timeline for the second half?
There's several that I'm just looking at the dates on here identified, end of November. Some are complete by fall 2019, because we had to have some latitude, because some things involved convening train ND meetings and getting input and improvements. So I'm hoping that we will have, the vast majority of these completed before the end of the year. But I'm also mindful that it's something that it takes more time to get a better product, that I'm quite willing to give NDSCS more time to improve on that. But I'm shooting for the bulk of them to be done by the end of the year.
Thank you. And is there and hopefully Member Nesset is still on the line, will there be a reroute of the completed plan back to audit committee and then a full report provided to the board?
Certainly, we will.
How do we? I guess I'm looking towards the end of this, and how do we wrap this up?
Correct.
We have a full report, Chair Hacker.
Correct. We certainly look forward to bringing it to the audit committee so they can review it, and then back to the full board.
Okay. Thank you, and Member Nesbitt, I'm hopeful that when you guys review that, you can take a look to ensure that the appropriate number of steps have been taken, and if there's anything additional, that you would make additional recommendations.
I'll assure you we'll take care of that in committee and bring it to the board. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Chair Hacker, may I proceed to 24?
You bet.
Okay. So next one is the BSC search. Again, it's going to be a big loss to lose Dr. Scogan after 12 years, but he's pretty set in his ways of his plan, but he did give us a whole year. The committee has been established, and Member Mihalik, I believe, has already had one of the first listening sessions. I hope to wrap up by March to bring the recommendations to the board, but I'll defer to Member Mihalik if he has anything he wanted to add about progress so far.
Thanks, Chancellor. Yes, I have been part of four listening sessions, and I've come to the conclusion that, Larry, you can't retire. But I asked him that, I did see him on Tuesday, and he told me that's off the table, so we'll move ahead with the process. And we've got some great feedback with the different listening sessions. Next October 30th, the full search committee will meet and begin to move forward. But at that point, you know, we'll continue to lay out the timeline, very similar, obviously, to what Dr. Ryan is going through with UND. So get a breath as we move forward. Thank you.
All right, Chair Hacker, proceeding 25.
Great.
Okay. So as you all informed by email, that Dr. Mitzel will be leaving, completing approximately 4 years, almost to the day, and has been hired into a university in Kentucky that I understand is very interested in the Dickinson model of adapting to workforce needs and kind of going from liberal arts to the dual mission. And so very exciting for him, but we've got to move on. We have basically, through thorough review by HR and the attorneys, determined that even for an interim search under a law change a couple years back, that we have to do a search. And I'll tell you right now, I think we need to speak with members of the interim committee and legislature and get a correction to this, because this is somewhat problematic. It's one thing to ask people to put their name out there in public to compete to be the permanent president, but to have someone just be asked to do an interim search, but have to be an interim president, to have to go through a search and potentially being turned down, I think is going to prove fairly complicated. But we are where we are, and I want to thank Chair Hacker, who expended quite a bit of time asking hard questions, going back, reviewing this. But we will have to have a search conducted by my office to pick an interim. In the past, if you recall, I was able to just do phone calls and then propose. I could just propose one name. In fact, I proposed two names to the board. But now we'll have to do a search. Member Hacker and I will be doing a listening session next week at Dickinson, and the ad is already out. There are already applicants coming in, and our anticipated plan is to be able to come to the board in a special meeting by November, no later than November, to pick the interim committee or the interim president for DSU, and then a full search will be done to fill the president, I would think, you know, no later than next summer. Chair Hacker, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I think I would just add some clarity in the reason for the search really revolves around the statutory requirement that we meet the threshold of providing veterans preference, and that's really the driver that's causing the searches even for non-permanent employees. We have to entertain all applicants and provide preference to veterans under the statute. And so that's what we're really trying to accommodate.
Thanks for that clarification. That is correct. It's well-meaning, but it's going to have significant implications because it's not just presidents, it's provosts, and so we will definitely be looking at how to maybe adjust that. May I proceed on? I'll turn over to Phil for an
sure.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Phil Weiskopf, the Vice Chancellor for Strategy and Strategic Engagement. Just a data point for you so you're aware that you recall that a year or so ago we separated out the evaluations for the four-year presidents and the two-year presidents, and so the evaluations for the two-year presidents will be coming to you for review on at the meeting on the 3rd of December. Chancellor's got them, he's working on them, and they'll be to you at your meeting on the 3rd of December.
And if I could add one thing, Chair Hacker, additional work we're doing here in the Cabinet and the System Office is to, as Member Traynor kind of pushed us, think of more efficient ways to do what we do, and one of them is to study adjusting the presidential evaluation system, in-depth reviews at a 3 to 5 year point, and a more focused but more brief review on an annual basis, because many of the things they aspire to will take several years to produce results, and this could save time and effort on the part of presidents and board time. So we're also working that for next June, you all.
Wonderful. Thank you. Appreciate the update. Thanks for the work, Phil, as we tackle the evaluations in a more efficient process. Did Member Morton make the call? I do believe his flight was supposed to land around 10:40. Don, did you make the call?
Chair Hacker,
I
haven't heard from him either.
Could you try to give him a call? We're going to go through the rest of the reports. I know that he did want to bring up a topic in regards to the day after Thanksgiving. And so we'll kind of do that in open discussion at the very end. So if you could try to reach him, that would be wonderful. Otherwise, we'll move on to NDSA. Member Schock?
Yes. So the North Dakota Student Association met. They have a couple of exciting items coming forward, collaborating with the Census 2020, trying to ensure that we get student participation in the census to ensure national funding. That's important. Conversations on dual credit and AP testing expansion. That's a very important issue to students as we're looking out for those in K-12 coming into higher education. The president of the North Dakota Student Association, Cambry, will begin touring all 11 institutions to speak with students about issues occurring on their campuses. One thing we had identified, this was news to us and something that we'd like to try to do, Reetha Mattern sends out her reports for her constituents. I think we would like to try and begin something similar so that people could see across the campuses what student governments have going on and what the core student issues are. And then, of course, we have some internal issues as we're getting ready for the next year, the legislative year, so that we can be prepared to speak on the behalf of students. And that is our report.
Thank you, Member Schock. And as you identify a legislative agenda for next session, we would hope that we could partner on as many of those topics as possible together with the students. And so look forward to that ahead of the next session. And please thank Cambry for her time and commitment to tour all of the other institutions and stay connected with the student body as a whole. So much appreciated.
Thank you.
Member Gregson.
Thank you. I think that Reetha and the staff group has started a trend because the Council of College faculty is as well. We'll be trying to collect information from each campus to share with the NDUS office, State Board of Higher Ed, in the same fashion that the staff does. So that's something that we've decided to do. The only other thing is a concern about the State Board of Higher Education Governance Committee is having a voice with CCF on that. So we have agreed that our president, Ken, will attend or call in to those meetings to get a feel for things that are happening in the governance committee. We have a CCF member on all of the other committees, but as you know, the governance committee is fairly new, and that one's probably you know, slipped by us, so we're going to have a member there from now on. And that's all I have.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Member Mattern.
All right, well, first off, I have to say I'm a little bit honored because I don't think I've ever before in my life been a trendsetter, but I think something that we have seen great feedback on sending that report to the board, so great to hear that some other groups are going to join in on that too. I was able to send that out this morning, so board members, you should have it in your email if you haven't already seen it. There's a lot of great updates from individual campuses. A couple themes that I always like to highlight too. Of course, being that it's Halloween a week away from now, there's a lot of different campus events that are going on among staff members for costume contests and potlucks and just sort of fun things for the season, which is always a fun morale boost, just makes coming to work a little enjoyable. And then there's also been an emphasis on professional development. Many of the campuses individually have sought out to bring speakers to campus for lunch and learn sessions or to just kind of help staff members on their campus find those opportunities for professional development. We have also been working on the, as a state staff senate, to find out ways that we can kind of combine resources and maybe find some efficiencies with providing those professional development sessions. So, for example, if one campus was interested in having a particular speaker visit and another was interested in that same speaker, maybe they could share in some of the travel costs or the honorariums that might need to be paid depending on an individual speaker and their requirements. So we're working on that, although it's still pretty early on in that process. And then as well as just recognizing the outstanding work that many of our staff members have done. You can read through some individual names and awards that were listed on some of those updates. And then the last topic, and I'm kind of hoping that Member Morton can get on this call, is of course the Friday after Thanksgiving initiative or discussion is still one that staff has been hoping to see some success with.
Thank you, Rita. And I'll just kind of expand on that a little bit. I know that Don is in an airport and trying to get on the call here, but we've had some discussions with the governor's office and started discussions with legislative leadership. This is a statutory change that would need to be made. We had a conversation at our last meeting in regards to the day after Thanksgiving becoming a state holiday. And so although we're not going to have an action item here today, the discussion, just to update the board, is to ask Rita and the system office to accelerate those discussions with state leadership, both within the governor's office as well as legislative leaders, towards establishing the Friday after Thanksgiving as a state holiday. And so I think there's some interest from higher education, and as Rita had just mentioned, especially from the staff, in regards to that day being a state holiday. Of course, just as a reminder, we don't have, no institution has classes on that day either, and so effectively, most of our campuses are about half shuttered on that day, and there are numerous other states that consider that day a holiday, including some other states near us, such as Iowa and Montana. And so I think at this point we'll just ask Member Mattern to stay engaged with the system leadership, the chancellor's office, Member Morton, to continue that conversation with legislative leadership and to see if we can't move this into a legislative topic for the next session. And that's at the point in which the board would take an action on supporting a legislative draft bill. So board members, you will see this again and you'll have an opportunity to voice your position and to vote on the topic. For now, we would like to just accelerate the conversations with legislative leadership in the governor's office. Are there any concerns about doing that?
Chair Hacker, Dean Bresci, may I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Dean.
And it's only in support of the brief outline you provided, aside from it being a good idea if it was done as state policy and something that's becoming increasingly common around the country. There is also an unintended consequence of current practice, which is the people at the staff level and probably the lowest paid staff levels are the ones most likely still having to come to work on that day after Thanksgiving because of all the reasons you outlined. That's certainly nobody's intent, but you are correct in the observation that it's a pretty skeleton crew that's on our campuses the day after Thanksgiving, and it's unfortunately impacting one group of employees very differentially than others.
I really appreciate you pointing that out, Dean. Thank you. And that's what we're trying to help that group or that skeleton crew to have that day off. So appreciate you bringing that up. Okay, board members, that's the end of our agenda. I apologize. I didn't add public input or have the system office add that. So in the future, Christy and Terry, if we make sure we have public input in the future meeting dates. We will have a special meeting roughly the second or more likely the third week of November to look at that DSU appointment for an interim. And so please keep an eye out for the scheduling of that. Christy will do her best to identify dates that work for as many of us as possible. And then also, just feedback on the meeting. Are there areas of improvement? Please reach out to me and let me know. Do you want more time on different items? There has been concern in the past over consent agenda. I'm hopeful that we've kind of tackled that with spending a little more time on it today. But always open to ways that we can improve, and would appreciate your feedback. So thank you all for your work today. And have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
The conference will end in
2 minutes.
Hello? 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 I think they ended it. Hello?
The conference is now ending. Goodbye.